Right outside of Craftsman and Wolves in the Bayview neighborhood of San Francisco, I am Schmitty, and this is Talkin' Schmidt. Today's episode is dedicated to Preston Mygetter. On the show, we have X-Think Skateboards pro Matt Pales, king of the back lip, overnight Rasta sensation, and Sacto resident, talking about the old Think days, living with Dan Drehobel, and his reggae song that has over 8 million views on the old YouTube.
I came home and I was like singing the song over and over in my head, like ganja my meditation, ganja my brain. And then I was like, I wrote it out. And so I got home and I was kind of blazed and I just sang it out real quick. Boom, I put it together and I mixed it. And I was like, I don't need to fuck with this at all. This is perfect, right? So then I put it on MySpace. Within like a week, it was getting 1,000 plays a day. I'm getting $100 a month from my music, and it's just all ganja in my brain. And then all of a sudden, it got on YouTube, and it's just over time, it just became like millions and millions of plays. And whoa. I think the most I made in a month was $800 one time.
What's up, man? This is Pales, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt.
Hit him up. Check out his podcast, Talkin' Schmidt Live. Bye bye.
Get ready, ladies and gents, because this is going to be a good one. I was sitting at the B Street on the tables listening to some of what you guys are going to hear. He had stories about Gall, Fred Gall at a contest going, come on, Pales, let's go skate that quarter pipe. He had stories about staying with Matt Reason, rest in peace. He's just an all-out badass dude. And like Jeremy Fish said, you probably ain't going to get nothing done trying to listen to these podcasts, because you were right, Jeremy. I tried vacuuming, and I had my phone up to my ear trying to vacuum and listen to your shit. I had to turn it off and just listen to you. So you're right. You ain't getting shit done on Talkin' Schmidt. Here we go again.
It's cool. Like, tonight is the night.
Just give it the old college try, right
here. Big dog's in.
What do you think, Schmitty?
96 times, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty.
John, Schmitty.
Talkin' Schmidt.
He's so fucking big.
He shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Schmidt.
Let's hear it for Dave Smith. Yeah!
Hello, everybody. We are in the 916 up in Sacktown, and I'm coming off a hefty breakfast at the old Bacon and Butter.
Oh, Bacon and Butter.
Yeah, and I'm about a 7-minute drive from there in the garage of the one and only Matt Pales.
What's up?
How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Thanks for making it. Thanks for coming out.
Dude, thanks for having me. We're in this little studio. His son's in a band. He plays music, and there's drum kits. There's two keyboards. We got mixers. We got all kinds of stuff. Yeti mics. It's like guitars. Sick.
Yeah, don't tell the location. I don't want to get
people
coming through trying to swipe stuff.
He's got a bunch of dogs.
Got an 1800 piano over here.
Oh, yeah. The Kimball Chicago right there.
It was here when I moved in, so I kept it.
How long you been here?
This house, 15 years, about 16.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you were born in the East Coast?
Yeah, Massachusetts.
Boston or outside?
Well, outside of Boston. I was born in Beverly. It's a small town in Massachusetts, but I grew up in this small town called Rowley. And then we used to skate. Really, what I skated the most was Newburyport, Amesbury, and we'd take the T into Boston to go skate.
Uh-huh.
Like, sneak out to go there for the weekends and shit.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school in Massachusetts, and then...
In what city, though?
It's called Byfield, Mass. It's a tiny little town. Newburyport.
Is that where Salvo is from, too?
No, Salvo's from Lowell.
Oh, that's
right.
And
I used to skate with Greg. He's from Lowell. And who else? And Manny Santiago ended up being from Lowell.
Oh.
Dave Bajinski. They all came from
PJ
Lowell.
PJ Ladd, too.
PJ Ladd was he Lowell? He's somewhere in Mass, but I don't think, I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Lowell was sick though. Actually, it had good brick banks. It had a good this police station that was sick to skate. We had like a little crew of like 5 guys. So it's weird. Back east, you get little crews, and then they're in different towns, and you just, you know what I mean? Like, there's not many skaters, so we'd be like oh, where are you going this weekend? You know, oh, we're going to go to Drake it, or we're going to go to Lowell. And then all the Lowell guys would be like, let's go into Boston for the, you know, we'll meet you at the Boston Garden and then skate from there to like Copley and then go from there to the Boston City Hospital, wherever, right. wherever it was. Yeah.
Sick. Did you have a thick accent back then, or?
I had a worse one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back then I did. But there's a thing like back East, there's some people who have it so bad. They're like super towny and you're just like, oh man, like that guy sounds ridiculous, you know? And I still have it a little bit, but it's not as prevalent. You know?
Uh-huh.
Like when I say afterwards.
Afterwards.
We go in there afterwards, and then someone's like, did you say afterwards?
I'm
like,
fucking chowder guy.
Yeah, yeah, dude. Fucking afterwards.
Fucking Salva's got it good. He can put it on
he
thick
puts it
in
on,
a second.
Huh? Yeah,
yeah, he'd be like, get the chowder guy.
Yeah. When we first moved to fucking to SF, me and him would be like, everyone's like, ugh, dude, that's hella sick. Fucking sick, dude. Like, all that. And we were like, fuck, dude, that's wicked awesome. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like,
wicked.
Like, hello, what the hell?
Oh, shit.
You know, and Drake Jones and Jamie Thomas used to laugh at us because we had such thick, like, kind of Boston accents. And we'd throw it on purpose just to fuck with everybody. Like,
absolutely.
Like, can we go over there? Are we going over there? You know.
That's rad. Do you remember what your first real skateboard was?
My first board was a Town and Country. Oh. And I put pink zebra stripe grip tape on it, Town and Country. And it was just some board I bought at the shop, right? And that thing kind of sucked. And it was, I thought it was cool at the time because it was like in the BMX magazines. And I was like, oh, that must be a legit board.
Mm-hmm.
But then that thing died on me and I got a fucking, my friend had a used Eddie Radigy.
Alva.
Yep. And that thing was fucking great. Man. But my first like favorite board was the Lester Kasai. I asked for it for Christmas and my mom got it for me. And then I was like so psyched on that thing. And it was like in her closet. So I'd come home from school every day and fucking just look at it and like touch the tail and fucking it was stained hella good. I think I was a member of the House of Kasai fan club or something.
No way.
I used to get newsletters.
I was a big Lester fan growing up, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, because I was like, he's a soy, but not really. So
yeah.
He's kind of like the underground soy.
Yep. How long were you out there till you moved out to the West?
So I lived there till I was 19.
So through high school and everything.
Yeah, through high school. And I was just talking to my girl about this morning because I saw a picture of a... Turtles in Boston. It's like an old skate spot in Boston that was sick. I don't know if you ever just had the tubes and shit.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of Jim Gagne ollieing up it. And I was showing her like, this is a spot we used to skate. And I was like, and that guy, Jim Gagne, I took a bus. My senior year of high school, I was going into my senior year and I took a bus to go to the Houston finals of like skateboard amateur contest. There was like Bricktown, New Jersey. And then it went fucking to North Carolina and then to Houston. But fucking that whole trip, like everywhere you went, like if you like the East Coast is all the East Coast skaters from that time. Liversedge, Gino, Barker, everyone was there. Even Cardio was there that time he showed up. And all these Shrugie was there at that. And then the next contest was like North Carolina. So like Chet Childress was there, Kenny Hughes, like all the dudes from that area.
Yeah.
And then when we got to Houston, it's literally that whole generation of like 93, 94 pros that just came out from like Andrew Reynolds, Matt Beach.
Mm.
I think I was on GNS. Fucking Jamie Thomas was there. Jake actually fucking was like, what are you riding there? And I was riding some shit Gull Wings. And he's like, I'm going to send you some indies. And he fucking hooked me up. And so I was able to call. I got indies sent to my house. And I was like fucking blown away like, I got indies for free. Like what? Like, I guess I'm on.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I was, but
you mentioned GNS. Was that the first sponsor? Was that your first hookup?
Like for a real company, I guess. Yeah. GNS. I was on GNS at the time. I sent him a good old fucking VHS tape.
Uh-huh.
Skating my local parking lots and shit. And they were like, yeah, we'll send you boards. And then they were down to like, you know, help me with plane tickets or all that kind of stuff. Help me with contest fees. So they were pretty on, like, being, like, a team sponsor at the time. It was cool. And even when I got to SF, I was still kind of on GNS. And I was getting, like, the Shannon May Everslicks and Charlie Thomas Everslicks and shit.
That was, like, 18, 19-year-old?
Yeah, almost at the end of GNS.
Okay.
And so I think Anthony Oglesby was on the team.
Uh-huh.
Matt Beach was still kind of on. Yeah, I was, like, basically, that was my 11th grade year going into 12th. And so I got back from that whole, like, tour in the whole country and meeting all these pro skaters. And I was, like, I think Matt Rodriguez was at that Houston contest. Jamal, like, everybody was there. And I remember getting back to high school and being, like, fuck am I doing here? Like, I want to be in California, you know? Like, so I think I did, like, six more months. I think I got enough credits to get out. And I had this money from my dad, was in the military. So I got, I think from 18 to 19, I was still in high school. So I was getting Social Security money from the military or something. So I had this like $2,500 saved or something.
Oh.
And I was just like, I'm moving. I'm going to SF. Like, my mom's all, what are you going to do that? You know, I'm like, don't worry, mom. It's going to be good. I'm moving in with this guy, Greg, and we're going to find somewhere to go.
Huh. Yeah. Did you already know Greg back there? Or did?
Yeah, I knew Greg from back there. And that's, we skated together all the time. And he had moved to like San Jose to live with his brother. And then he was like, you got to move to SF, because I was going to move to San Diego with, remember Jason Maxwell?
Yeah, yeah.
From, he was from Rhode Island, and he was on, he was trying to do something in San Diego with like some company.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I ended up being like, yeah, SF seems like way more sick, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
So I moved in with Greg. I moved in with Greg, and we fucking moved to San Jose for like a few weeks maybe. And we were like, this sucks. Let's take the train into, to meet Jamie Thomas, because he was really good friends with Jamie Thomas. So we went and stayed at his house for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Then we met these chicks on the corner of like, in the Western Addition. It was some, it's right by Divisadero. And they were like, hey, and we're flirting with them and talking to them. And they were like, we need roommates. And we're like, we got money. We can move in. And within like a few like days, we were already moved into that spot.
Nice.
But the funny thing is, I don't mean to ramble, but there's a funny thing is once we moved in, they had a party that night. And so all the skaters came, and fucking Sean Young was living with Jamie, and they all came, and then he met one of the girls and they hooked up. So then all of a sudden Shauna moved in. And then of course you got Hurley moving in, cause Sean's moved in.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we got all these people living there. And then somehow Clyde Singleton ended up on the couch. So we had this whole fucking house full of people. And me and Greg were just renting the room, and we live right by DMV.
Uh-huh.
Right in that area.
Okay.
And then there was like some weird weed dealer dude in the back who sold weed, and we'd never seen Green Bud before. So we were like, what is this shit? Like, you know? And I think even for some time, the City Stars, no, at the time it was Menace, Billy Valdez, Fabian Alomar, Joey Surreal, Pupecki, they were all staying there for like, I think Damn. Like a good like 2 weeks to 3 weeks, like
Heavy
every day.
Skate house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before that though, you were skating Rats and Maximus, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
What were
How'd you find out this info?
Well, I got friends. Is that kind of where you met Drehobel?
Yeah, like, and actually, I kind of knew Drehobel. Like, so we used to drive from Mass up to Rats once we found out about Rats, because that park was sick, right?
Where was that?
It was in Maine. So that's like, you got to drive through New Hampshire and to Maine.
Is that in Dan's town or no?
Yeah, close
Brunswick by. Brunswick or whatever?
Close by Dan, yeah. It was Biddeford, but I think it's a few towns over.
Okay.
So we used to drive there because it's fucking snowing in the East Coast, and you only have like Maximus or Rats to skate. And maybe we had like a abandoned building that we skated sometimes. So I used to drive there in my Volkswagen buggy, and it had that rotted out floor, so the fucking salt and all the shit would come up through the floor, and we'd still just be powering through the snow just to get there, and they'd be talking shit the whole way, like just everyone crammed into one fucking, you know, VW bug, you know, getting all the way up there. And we'd make it though, and we'd get there, and just like, I think one time they had a lock-in where you stay the night.
Yep.
And Ben Liversedge came with us that time, and there was, I think Rob Welsh was there, and when Welsh used to be there, he was just like this little weird kid, and he was hella good at like 360 flip nose slides, and we were just like, he's kind of good, but he's kind of a weird kid, right? And then as he got older, and then he would be like, yeah, I know Drehobel, and then as I got older, I realized, oh, that's that guy Rob that used to be at the fucking Rats when we'd go there. Remember him? He was like, but he was shorter. He was like a little guy then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But he was hella cool. But we were just like, who's this guy? You know? Well, no, because Dan like gave him a ride home one night, he told me. And then he was like giving him shit in the car, and it was like a snowstorm, and Dan's all, fuck you, dude. Get out of the car. He's like, it's fucking snowing. And he just abandoned him in the fucking snowstorm. And there ain't no cell phones back then. And Dan's like, laughing about it. I think there was another one where he chucked rocks at Dan. Like, I mean, Dan chucked rocks at him and pegged him from across the river. Rob was telling me a funny ass story.
That was Collinson, I think. That's how Collinson got his name, Magna Ed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically how Dan was back then. He just thought fucking with people was hella funny. I don't know how he got away with it, though. I remember being like, living with Dan and being like, how's he get away with being an asshole to everybody? And everyone still likes him.
Some people have that. It's weird.
It's just like they can, you can tell he's just being a fucker, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I didn't really meet Dan until we kind of knew each other. But when I moved to SF, me and Salba were living in that house. And then we kind of got tired of it. And we were about to move in with Dan on Leavenworth. And we had skated with him a bunch. And that's how I met him. 2 or 3 months into living there.
Oh, okay. But so you guys had skated just as like acquaintances back east.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And we just kind of knew him a little bit, like not super tight. Like he was already out here earlier for like Blockhead and all that kind of stuff. And he'd already made his like I was back east looking at the slap magazines that were made of like paper, you know?
Uh-huh.
And there was like a couple ads of Dan and he's on Think. And I remember I loved Think back then because I watched Partners in Crime, and I used to watch that every day and be like, oh, this team is so sick. Ronnie Bertino's fucking dope, and Carl was sick, and Nick Lockman, and all those guys. And I just loved that video, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember thinking Think was like, you know, kind of like World or something back then. It was like the cool company, you know?
Yeah. And what was Maximus?
Oh, ZT. Maximus was a little park right next to the Cambridge Pool, and I'd take the T there. Basically go in. It was like a sick ass mini ramp and a vert ramp that was only like 10 feet, but it had big old coping. Like the coping was like hella big on both the mini and the half pipe. So we used to fucking just, you know, take the train in, and then you go skate for the day. You know, some guy named Ken owned it, and he had a go-kart fixing spot right in the place.
Oh,
kind of like Fosto's little go-karts he used to fuck with.
Yeah.
Like
it was the same
kind of stuff. And Ken was like hella, he was a weird guy, but he was cool. And he was just running a skate park, and it was fucking cool. It was a good park. And it eventually turned into like a street park mixed with the half pipe.
Okay.
But it used to just be a mini ramp and a big old half pipe. And, you know, everyone used to skate there, like Robbie or Jamal and all those guys.
Robbie and Jimmy?
Yeah, he used to, like everyone used to.
He was the first, so I filmed a clip of him. That was my first clip that was ever in a Thrasher video.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was the trick?
He was skating Woodside in Redwood City, the halls. I don't know if you ever went down
there. Yeah.
And he ollied the length of a table.
Yeah.
And
was I there with him that day?
You might have been.
Because I remember.
Me and McKenny went there because we heard there was a big session. You probably were there. And I kind of think that was the beginning of McKenny getting hooked up with Think and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm.
It was a big session.
And I love that spot. I remember me and Phil went there and filmed like a lot one day.
Yeah.
And it might have been right around that same time, and you might have been filming. But we had, I remember just loving that spot because you could just haul ass.
Get lines and go fast.
And just, and just fucking clear tables. Like it's nothing because you're going so fast. And I just remember Phil was skating hella good that day. So I was like super stoked to try to like, all right, I'm going to go too. Me next, you know, like
right. Kind of
thing. I think I had an elbow pad on and shit.
Sick. Yeah. Did you meet P-Stone back east before you moved to Cali?
Yeah. So when I used to go in my last year of living in Boston, we used to take the train in all the time. And I started like not having people come in with me as much because they were busy or they didn't want to go skate or didn't want to take the train into Boston. So, and I had just met Liversedge that whole like summer before on the whole like tour of like all the skate contests from the East Coast, the NSA and all that weird shit. And so Liversedge was going to college there, and I'd go in and stay at his dorm. And then he's like, oh, I met this cool guy, P-Stone or Preston. Oh, back then it was just Preston. And I was like, yeah, I know him from Maximus, the guy with the ponytail. I was like, he fucking rips. Like, he'd skate vert so sick. Like, he could just, and he was always hella positive and just, you know, P-Stone, just in a good mood. And so we'd all fucking go out in like 0 degree weather and just go get coffee and get powered up like nice and warm. And then we'd go skate these curbs by Prudential, or we'd go skate some Copley shit. And P-Stone just was sick because he was hella big with those big old Converse or whatever he'd wear. I think he had Reebok pumps sometimes. He'd always have some crazy shoes.
Uh-huh.
But he'd fucking ollie hella high and just he was always down, and he was always like so cool. So I met him back then. Like, we'd go in every weekend and skate with him in Liversedge. And this kid Alex, I don't remember, Cazares.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what happened to him, but yeah, it was that's where I first met P-Stone. But then we became friends and stayed in contact for years. And like, Dude, he did. He helped me like film a bunch of video parts when I was still like, you know, the VHS days. And yeah. It was basically like my profile. I think he almost filmed the whole thing. He took me on a tour all through Arizona. And he just always had the links. He's like, oh, yeah, man, we're going to go stay with this guy. I'm going to skate with Colby Carter. And
he had it dialed.
Like, yeah. And he, even back then, like before, right when he was starting to make Justice. He's at that point, he was still always filming and he was always like, come on, man, you got this, next try. Like always getting you to do it, you know? Yep. And so like it would have been years. Like I think we talked here and there for like the last 10, but it had been years since we actually hung out and gone skating.
Uh-huh.
I think I saw him at B Street when they almost burned down the B Street.
Oh yeah, I was there. Whew. So then you moved out to California. You went to San Jose for a little bit, but basically went straight to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then you had the stint in the Western Addition, and then your next place you moved into was with Drehobl on Leavenworth?
Yeah, we moved in with Drehobl on Leavenworth.
Was O'Brien involved?
No, we didn't move in with O'Brien till we all got a place at 14th. Octavia.
Oh.
The 14th was next. It was like every year was like a new spot. But
right.
Leavenworth was cool because we'd wake up, and that's where I got on Think.
Oh.
We'd wake up in the morning. And Dan would call Greg, and then I met Greg, and we'd be skating with him. And within like a few weeks, Greg was just like, fuck you riding that. I think I was still getting GNS boards, and I couldn't get a board. So Laban gave me a I Love Cops, like a blockhead board.
Uh-huh.
And I was about to put it together, and Greg's all, fuck you putting that thing together, dude. I was like, I don't got a board. He's like, here's a fucking Think board, dude. Just put this thing on. And he gives me a Think board, and I'm like, cool. He's like, you want to ride the Think? I was like, yeah. You know, and then from that day I was on kind of.
Oh, know. Sick.
Yeah, and but we'd skate from Leavenworth all the way down the hill to fucking Market Street, and then we'd hit EMB, and from there wherever, you know, try to sell some flat spotted wheels or something.
Uh-huh. Damn. Those were the good days. That was like, fuck, shit was popping in San Francisco. Yeah. Everyone was coming here, and it was just like the place to be.
Yeah, it was crazy cuz we were still kind of like the not really the T-Dog crew, but sort of, you know, like we were like the crew from out of town, but we weren't necessarily ones that people hated on, but we were really there during that thick of it. Like
when EMB was going off.
Yeah. And I mean, we knew everybody, so everyone was cool. But I remember the first few people I met was like Joe Brook, Shelby Woods, and like
Shell Black.
Yeah. And James, of course, because he's can I get a smoke, man?
Yeah.
You know? And then from there, you know, James. And so. But they were always cool to us. We never really had any issues at EMB. We just would be there with everybody. The Counterfeit Twins was this weird Russian twins.
No way.
And they skated for Counterfeit. They were there every day.
I didn't know them. How funny.
But I was there that day when Gino, I think this was maybe a couple years, like in maybe a year and a half, but Gino went to backside heel flip the Gons that day. And we all went down there and that was like a sick day. It was like Pupecki was there. We were all there and we were like, just like amazed. You know, I think he switched backside heel flipped the seven.
Yeah.
Backside heel flipped the Gons.
Fuck.
Switched backs 180 the seven. I think Pupecki fronts 180 flipped the seven. And that was a sick day. And not long after that, Jamie Thomas went there to the Gons. And he had this competition with Gons to kickflip it that day. And Jamie was so serious about it. He wanted to get it so hard.
Uh-huh.
And we were all like, oh, is he? Who's going to do it? You know? And Jamie did it once and stuck it and fell. And then Gons just did this wild kickflip, fucking landed it. And we were just,
That same day, I think Drehobl was trying 360.
Like a front three?
Front three over it.
Yeah, dude.
I have the tape of that. The footage is nuts. And then Jamie, I think, maybe ollied it barefoot that day, maybe.
Oh, really?
Or it's all on the same tape. It might have been a couple of days.
Different times, yeah.
But like that, dude, McBride real young. And like, there's so many faces in the tape. And you're just like, what this footage rules.
You know what I have? I have this old reel tape in my room. It's a high eight. Or whatever, you know those tapes?
Yeah.
The big square ones?
Yeah.
It's got hella Gons footage on it.
No way.
That's why I was like, if you can watch it or fucking
For sure. I got a guy that's digitizing all my old tapes at work right now. Yeah, I could do that and then mail it back to you or whatever.
Yeah.
Drehobl actually asked me to ask you a couple questions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dan actually is one of the most requested people for me to have on the podcast.
Yeah. Why doesn't he do it?
I don't know. You decided you wanted to do a podcast, not me.
So him, dude.
So,
no, dude. Fuck, you decided you wanted to do a podcast.
I'm going to go down and just hide a mic and we'll just.
Yeah, just talk shit
for a little bit. But he's good about sending me some questions for each person. He said to ask you about when you were tripping on acid on your birthday and he baked you a cake and started singing happy birthday.
So no, it was shrooms. I was like so I was so psyched. It was my birthday. It was 22nd birthday. I remember because it was 2 and 2 and I thought it was a weird thing when I was tripping. Uh-huh. But everybody was there at the house and I was so excited. And so I was like, I'm going to fucking really take some shrooms today and have hella fun. So I ate this huge mushroom cap. Like this motherfucker was like that big.
Yeah.
And so I ate it and I was cool for a second. And then all of a sudden I walked outside and like the buildings looked like they were falling down and getting back up. And I was like, oh shit, I'm tripping really hard. So I walked back inside. And when I walked back in, Dan's got this knife and he's cutting the cake and they're singing happy birthday. And I'm just looking around like, holy fuck, I can't be here right now. Like, and I just walked out of the fucking place and just kept walking. And like, I think I snuck out before anyone could see me. So I start walking to the top of like Twin Peaks. Like, you know, that whatever that is at the top of Castro, it's not Twin Peaks. It's like that weird rock thing and you can see the whole city because I had to get away from everyone. I was like, ah, what's going to happen? This is like I was just too tripped out, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt hella bad then, like, you know, days later because I was like, oh, man, that was kind of weird of me to do. But I had this crazy trip and I remember coming down and being like, oh, man, everything is just one big energy, man. Super blasted, you know.
Holy shit.
I think I was weird for a few weeks after that
too. Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. I just took too many shrooms. I was like, whoops.
Hard to monitor. McKinney was mentioning to bring up some story about Fred Gall. He said you had some good story about Fred.
I mean, I remember being there the day that he did all that Hubba shit.
And oh, were you there? For the Switch 5?
I think I was either there for that one or the one where he skated that little Hubba on Market Street.
Uh-huh.
You know, the little Danny Sargent 180 nose grind fucking, it's kind of like a Hubba.
Yeah.
But I remember one day going there with him and he just Switch 5-0'd it, Switch everything did. And we were just like, this kid is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember him always being like, Pels, let's go skate, yo. And I do got a good story about him. Him and Lou were in this hotel room in fucking Toronto or something, and me and Dan were in the same hotel room with him, and him and his buddy Metal Lou were fucking fighting, full-blown fighting, like punching each other in the face and shit, and fucking put hell holes in the walls, and just like we had to cover them up with fucking pillows and shit, because they and me and Droba were just dying laughing the whole time because they were just tooling on each other and they'd be like Metal and just smashing each other. I have a lot of funny stories about him. I just can't think of them off the top of my head.
Holy shit! So when did you guys meet Phil? Must have been like
mainly through Think. Like basically, Dan kind of knew Phil already.
Uh huh.
And right away, I think one of the first days we all skated, I can't remember the first day, but I remember just right away being like, him and Dan hella goofed off together, and then he was hella cool to me, and we were just like, this guy's awesome. Like, we're going to skate with him and Paul all the time, you know? And we ended up meeting Paul and Phil. I think we ended up quickly being on some tour or some, like, I think it was mainly, like, contests Greg would bring us to, and we were, like, on the team together.
Mm-hmm.
I remember just like loving that guy right away because he was just hella like, oh, you know, he's always smiling and always like talking about skating. When you're skating with him, he's like, dude, when I do heel flips, do you do this? And he just right away be into like how to do a trick or how to, you know, that's what he wanted to talk about. And so we'd be like, he helped me with skating so many days that I was tripping on, I don't know if I could do this. He'd be like, I was thinking about that earlier. He'd have such an easy way of thinking about it. Like he'd just be like, no, you just put your foot right here and kick off of a heel flip like it's a 1 foot every time and it'll go right to your back foot every time. And I'm like, really? And then ever since to this day, I still do heel flips and think about when Phil told me how to do it at EMB or like we'd skate something big and I'd be tripping like that thing's so big. He's like, dude, all you got to do is get to the top and then ollie and grind. And then it just does it for you. And I'm like, yeah, convincing myself he's right, and it would help, you know, because I'd
everything was so fucking easy for him.
Yeah, and it was sick because it made me think like, oh yeah, skateboarding is just, you just go and you do it. It's not that hard, like, even though it is. You know,
I literally watched him go from a vert skater to a street skater, and I think it was basically in a, like, he broke his leg or something.
Yeah.
And he, the whole time he
was had his long hair.
Yeah. The whole time he was down. So I went over there to visit him a couple times. What are you doing? He's like, I'm watching Mike Carroll in slow-mo over and over.
Learning
how to do a nollie heel flip. And I was like, you can't skate right now. He's like, I know. I'm watching how he does it. And when I get able to skate, I'm going to be able to do
that's
it.
So how he
and
was,
I was huh? like, yeah, right. But and he, dude, he came out and he did all this shit. Like, and I was like, okay, fuck you.
Yeah, so good.
So easy.
And like, you could tell, like, every day, he'd always be like, oh, I suck at this or I suck at these. I'm like, dude, you're doing like the nollie heels and switch heels and nollie kickflips like better than most dudes.
Yeah.
Like, who are street skaters. Like,
yeah.
You're like... And he'd always kind of talk down on his street skating. I'm like, dude, if I could do tricks as clean as, like, still when I watch it to this day, it looks like it'd be good today. Like,
yeah.
So good. I think I was there the day him and Robbie Gangemi first cleared the thing at Miley and first got over the top of it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when he was like, I don't know if it was the same day or like the next week, he was like, I think I could just grind the top of that. Uh-huh. And just being like, because he had that. Like Miley can, it's hard as fuck to ollie off until you learn how to really.
Yes.
And so once you learn it, it's kind of like, oh, now I get it.
Uh-huh.
But he was able to like use that vert and transition skill of like thrusting yourself up there. And when he 5-0'd it, I know nowadays people do shit on the top, but back then it was fucking mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like, we were just like, holy shit. Like,
right.
I can't believe he did that. Right.
I have footage of him tail sliding like, and then just kicking out of it. Oh, it's like a whole, dude, it's so fun.
Oh, on the top
thing? Yeah.
What?
Like where that he, same where day, he 5-0'd? No, it was a little bit later. And he would just be like, and then I guess the story I heard is Whiteley went there with him to film it. And he ran out of batteries. And Phil did it anyway. But it never got filmed.
Use it then.
Yeah. So, no, it never got filmed because Whiteley didn't have
And no one took a photo.
Yeah, it was just them, and I don't know. I think about Phil a lot. Like, when we go to certain spots, I'll be like, man, if Phil was here.
Yeah.
You know, I still, like, it's been 21 years, and I still, there's still times where I was like, Phil's the guy for this spot.
Yeah.
Out of everyone, Phil's the guy.
Yeah, and he, man, he just had that ability to make it, like, from, like, a vert type thing, a super hard, like, transition type thing, and street mix.
Yeah.
And he could just, like, he's that was his thing. Like, oh, I'm going to fly off this and Smith grind this box. And
absolutely.
You know, he was so good at that kind of stuff. And it got me psyched to be able to try that stuff, too. And I was just tripping when they called me that day. I was like, wait, what? Like,
yeah.
I was, like, in the East Coast at my mom's house, and O'Brien called me, and I was just was like, that was the first time I ever lost someone that close to, like, my life, you know?
Same.
I was just like, still like, that's just crazy, man.
Paul came over to my house and I we went out on the front porch and I think I just started bawling and I was just sitting there in a daze going, he's like, that right then I real, knew though. I was like, he's gone.
Yeah, it doesn't seem real. I was tripping too. I was like,
gnarly one. Were you there when there's been probably a lot, but there's one in particular session at China Banks where like him and Dan and McKenny, it was like at the end of the damage video.
Yeah, and, I was there. I think I was there.
And Phil Smith grinds it and then Tailslide reverts it.
Yeah, I was there. Because I think that's the same day I wallied the fucking, because I was like, I got to do something. They're killing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I can wally off this thing over a fucking little garbage can, like, yeah. I can't really skate it like them because they were doing tricks on the top.
Yeah.
And I just at that point, like, maybe I could ollie a bench and that was my extent, but those guys really had figured out the transition and I remember just being like, oh my god, they're so good at this shit. Like, and Phil just kept doing it, like tail slide fakie, and Dan's like rail slide fakie, like,
yeah.
How do you board slide to fakie that?
He was the first one to ever do something over a bench, I think, on the top.
God.
And I think he did that board slide over the bench. I'm pretty sure no one did anything over the bench for at least 10 years yeah. after that. Yeah, like, it's not like he did that and then other people are like, oh, good idea. And it was yeah. like, no, that's fucked.
Well, that, yeah, and that was the thing is we used to skate. Instead of going to EMB and everyone was still skating ledges and blocks and shit, and Greg and Think, we kind of were learning, like, he always pushed on us to skate everything.
Yeah.
Kind of give us the idea. And we were with Phil, and Phil would skate everything, and so did Dan. So instead of going to, like, we're going to go skate EMB, we just would mob through the streets, get the China Banks, and skate China Banks. And everyone, no one skated China Banks.
Right.
It was like tech wizardry that day, yeah. that time of skating. So
small wheels and only, big pants.
Yeah, only like anti-hero guys or some other dudes would skate stuff like China Banks. So we really learned how to fuck with that transition. And Miley, it was like that, like, tight transition, weird shit that I normally wouldn't have skated either. But skating with Dan and Phil, they showed me all that. One time Dan fucking kept trying some trick on the top and his fucking board would keep going over. Like, this was like 2 days straight. And you know, Dan, he either has a great day or he has a terrible day and just starts smashing his board into pieces. Yeah. So he was having one of those smash your board into pieces days. And he fucking, his board kept going over the top and then it lands on the little checkers or the cards that they're playing. All the Asian guys would be, old Asian dudes would be playing checkers or... And it kept going over the side. And so it would fall down in there and almost hit the people or mess up their game. So after like two different times, Dan's board went over. He's like, fuck! And he'd go down to get his board and he'd come back up with it and they'd be yelling at him. And like the third time, this fucking Asian guy was like holding his board. And I was like, nah, he's yelling at him in Chinese. And Dan's just looking at him like, give me back my board. And the guy's like, fuck you, no. And Dan just says, fuck this. And we're like, dude, where are you going? And he's like, fucking going home. He just started smoking a cigarette and he walked home. We were like, okay, I guess that guy just came up on a board.
Oh man,
that was the end of that day.
What's some fucking crazy shit that happened at those houses? So you lived with him at Leavenworth, what was
Octavia
it? Octavia was, and was then like, 14th.
Yeah, I remember we used to pee out the window and the guy the landlord was some weird dude that looked like he was in Devo. And he fucking lived downstairs, and so we would want to, like, me and Greg lived in one room, so we'd pee out the back window instead of having to walk through like Drehobel and O'Brien's room or whatever. And I remember the landlord at one point was like, what the hell are you guys doing peeing out the goddamn window? Because we didn't want to have to get up and walk all yeah. the way over there. I mean, just crazy stuff. At Leavenworth, I don't know if Poncho wants me to tell this story, but...
Poncho!
we were at Leavenworth, and Dan was there, and me and Poncho had gone to some rave with Greg Carroll, and Mike Carroll was there, and I remember I hit up, I think I said something to Mike one day, like, you remember this night? And Mike was there doing like, it was like a hip, and he did like 360 flip tail slide over this hip, and all these sick tricks, and we were watching, and me and Poncho were like, I think we did... I'd never done acid or anything. That was the time. And so me and Poncho had taken some. We were like, what the fuck? Like, this is such a fun, like, experience, you know? And I just met Poncho, and he ripped, you know? I was like, who's this little guy? And he fucking rips, right? We go down the street, and he's doing heel flips going hella fast. And we're like, dang, this guy, like, kills it. Switch heel flips going so super fast down the street. And so me and him kind of did acid together, and that was kind of a cool first experience to do with him. And then we went back, and I think we even got a ride home from Mike Carroll and like his girlfriend, like some random night. We end up back in Leavenworth, and there was a girl in the bed at Dan's house with Dan's girlfriend. And I remember being like, oh, I remember her. I think we made out one. And so I kind of curled up next to her, and then all of a sudden she's like, what's that thing at my, what's going on at my foot? And I'm like, oh, that's my friend Poncho. And Poncho was cuddled up on her feet and she got all freaked out.
Oh, jeez.
It was fucking rad, dude. It was a funny time. It was like, we were like, fuck, 19 or 20 or something. But
all right.
Yeah. He's doing like horror movies and all kinds of cool yeah. stuff now, acting.
Yeah. He's doing, he got married too. I'm stoked
yeah,
for him.
To his girl.
You know, he had a hard time because I think he fucked his back up to a point where the doctors were like, you can't really skate anymore.
Oh, really?
And so just, you know, being Poncho is like, he's determined to do things, and like yeah. that's hard on him. And I think there was a, you know, acclimation period where he was struggling a little bit. I think he's doing really well now. I talked to him.
Yeah, he's like, he was like on American Horror Story.
Yeah.
He was on that. And then
and he's doing Rob Zombie movies. And he yeah. did a, have you ever seen his video for fucking John Cougar Mellencamp, I think.
No.
He's on a motorcycle saving a girl.
What?
You gotta see this. Yeah, it's the best.
And he does art. He does like sick art.
Oh, sick art. Yeah. Ponchy. Yeah. I need to get Poncho on the pod. Poncho,
come on, man.
Come on. Franco Nutman living in that garage with the butcher. Yeah, I've told this story a million times, but when Pat Duffy first got on the take, I'll never forget it because Poncho was like, Schmitty. Duffy just looked at me and was like, fuck, I went from Ternansky to Schmitty. I was like, dude, that was the relationship we had. We would, like, me, him,
and... You were TM at the time?
No, I was filmer, but, like, me, him, and McKenny would just bust each other's balls all the time. Because he would stay with Tim in San Mateo.
Oh, yeah.
So I lived down on the peninsula. So I'd pick them up, and we'd drive up to the city and go to Think and then go skating. And, like... We just spent a lot of time together, so it was like fucking...
Duffy still rips, man. I love watching him. Like, I've seen him do some kickflip into some steep-ass bank.
I saw that the other day. Yeah Duffy's...
Is he on Plan B again?
I think he's still, like a member type, kind of like Sheffy and him, or like probably like the Legend or something. So how did Matt O'Brien get into the mix?
Well, he was... Okay, so like we knew O'Brien from another spot that we'd go to. Back east, if we had like a good long road trip we'd want to go on, was the Playground.
And is that in Connecticut?
Connecticut. And that's like Tony DeSilva. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Foundation. His mom, Bruna, she ran the place and she was super cool. And then like the locals were like Matt O'Brien, Greco, Tony DeSilva, Brian DeGrab. I never really skated with him. Some other guys, but Gaberman. Uh-huh. So they were like the locals. So we'd go there. I think we only went there like 5 or 6 times, but we met O'Brien there and just we're like, that dude's got a sick style. And I think somehow he moved out to SF with Gaberman. And that's where when he moved out there, I think he met Drohobel and all of us. And he's like needing a place to live too because everyone was moving out there. And we were like, I'm pretty sure O'Brien moved in next door to Dan. So Dan and O'Brien were in one room and me and Salba had another room.
Mm. And then eventually Upson was in there, I think.
Yeah, well, Upson came and stayed with us like at once we moved to Guerrero Street.
Oh, okay.
And he came and stayed like with O'Brien. And that's Upson was another Playground local.
Yeah.
And all those guys fucking, we thought they ripped so hard. They were hella good.
Super good, yeah.
Mini ramp, like killers.
So speaking of Greco, how did you get so good at, as Greco would say, going over the back, the old back lip?
Oh, I don't know. That was just my trick, man. I was like, I don't have a super tech like catalog of tricks. I just have my shit that I do.
Uh-huh.
And I like back lips a lot. And so I just go for the old back lip fucking because it was easy for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of sketchy for me now. Like, I want to do a handrail again, like a big one, a good size one and backflip one, but I have to, like, work my way up to it.
Did you, like, get comfortable with those at a skate park or something when you were younger? Or like,
oh, no. You know what I had in my driveway? Like, I lived in the cut, so I just had a PVC grinder bar, and I just skate that all day.
The flat ones?
Yeah, I just skated all day, so that was one of my tricks. And 8th Street really... What's up, Ben?
That's
my roommate. This is Schmitty from... Thrasher.
Let's take a quick time out, hear from some of our peeps, and we'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So like, watching the 8th Street videos, I fucking loved Matt Hensley. He was like my favorite skater. And like, you know, he did every variation of the back lip. So for me, I just wanted to do back lip everything. I wanted to kick flip back lip. I wanted to do cab back lip and everything he did in the 8th Street video. So I just do those all the time. So that was like my go-to trick. You know, I still to this day can throw down a back tail, but it's not my like, I just feel weirder. I feel like if I throw over the back lip, it's easier.
What was like one of the biggest ones you did? Was it that Japantown one. There was one you had like on that rail. I think it was in Japantown. Like it was maybe red.
Yeah, I mean I did one for an iPad dad at fucking what's that school that I Washington, the one where Mike Carroll does the nose slides and Plan B down the long.
Oh, Lincoln.
Lincoln. I did a back lip for an iPad dad, right? I did it with Gabe, and I landed it and slid out. Like, okay, I got it. Like, it was cool for the ad, but let's go back and film it. Like, I had landed it, but I was like, I slid out and did a power slide, so it wasn't good for footage, but I mean, the photo looks sick, and I think that's the biggest rail I've done for a back lip. Uh-huh. So we went back, and my third try, I fucking clipped on the way back and went fully backwards, legs in the air, bounced on my back all the way down the thing and flipped over and hit my head, but I had a big old dread beanie, so my head like got protected. But I was like, oh, my back. And they were like, holy fuck, like I could have broke my back. And then that night, and I was like really hurt. And then so like whatever, Gabe drove me home. And with Gabe, I'd always either get the trick or get broke off.
Yeah.
So, because he'd be like, you got this. Let's do it right now, Pills.
Right.
So then I went home that night, and it's the middle of the night. I'm going to the fucking bathroom, and halfway through getting to from my bed to the bathroom, I just passed out and fell on the floor because I was in so much pain from my back. I didn't know what I did to it.
Whoa.
And then the next day, I had to fly to Woodward Skate Camp. So I'm on the fucking plane, like, dying of pain. And I end up going to some hospital after I got a rental car, and they were like, you almost broke your sacrum, I think it was. And I had a football size bruise on my back. I couldn't skate for like a month or something.
No way.
But yeah, I think that might have been the biggest one. And then maybe I backlipped here in Sacramento, San Juan, which is like a 13 stair or something. It's a weird trick because as long as you get on it right, it's just gonna fall into place.
Can you do front boards?
Yeah,
because it's like it's the same thing, but all you know, yeah.
Those are kind of like my little go tos. I mean,
is that your the good warm-up? Old
basic tricks? A front board, if I skate a rail, either a board slide or a front board would be the first go-to trick. Because uh-huh. A front board, you can just sit on and throw away in front of you and throw it away so that you don't step back on it. But yeah. A front lip, you could clip on the way up.
Yeah.
And a board slide, you could throw away too. So I still try to do a rail here and there just to keep being like, yeah, you can still do that. So I've been trying to still get down a little, but I used to be like a back 50 would be cool because right away you get on and get off.
Mm-hmm.
I remember me and Phil skated this. It was like for some weird Euro mag, and we skated the Cliff House rail. It used to have a rail back there,
mm-hmm.
And me and Phil feeble grinded it.
Oh yeah,
and I back 50'd it. And I was like, yeah, because I remember being like, I can't fuck with this, and Phil's like, dude, just try it, and he fucking feeble grinded it. I was like, oh, I guess I can do it.
That's so rad how he would push people to like get in the best of them.
Yeah, he didn't even mean to. He just was psyched on. Yeah, you know, had that natural positivity. I remember him and Dan were pretty bummed on me when I kind of quit or got kicked off Think. It was kind of a mutual. Because I was like, you know, speaking of like doing the shrooms, at that time I was super like hanging with Mike Dare, and we were just doing shrooms and smoking weed and skating all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of like, this was years after like Think had started and I was in there deep. But after years of doing it with Think, like a few years, I started being, you know, I didn't wear the shirts, and Greg and Keith and Foster would be like, you got to wear the shirts, man. I'd be like, but, you know, I started kind of going on my own little weird hippie trip. And I think they were like, you know, but I remember Phil being like, dude, did you quit? What the fuck? And I was like, I don't know, man. It just is what it is at this point. Like, you know, I felt bad because I loved those guys, but I thought at that point I just needed to move on to something else. But looking back, I really think like you should have just stuck with that, you know, like, but at the same time, you know, different times, life and new different times.
Yeah. So is that kind of right around the time you got heavy into reggae?
Yeah, that was like, I was getting into reggae. I was like, you know, smoking mad weed, but I was still skating a lot, but I was kind of going on my own little weird, like, you know, kind of like self-discovery trip. And I think it was hard for other people to deal with. I think I lived in my van for a little bit with my dog, and they were like, you know, it was like, I tried to live like, you know, let me live in my van, and that fucking sucked. I thought it was cool for like a week or maybe a month. And then I was just like, And I ended up living with a girlfriend like right next door to those guys anyways.
No
way. Because
I'd
just go stay at her house. The van eventually got impounded. I think it had a dead battery. I don't know how to fix it at the time. Now I'm like a super mechanic. But back then I just was like, I don't know. I just left the thing by 469 Guerrero.
So then did you start getting boards from...
right after Supernaut, Mike Ballard and them were starting Supernaut. And right around that time, I think Mike Ballard came up and was like, I moved to Excelsior District and I lived out there and it was like a weird time. But at the same time, it was cool because I was painting a lot and doing all this weird artistic shit because I was getting all like hippied out and getting into my creative side. And I started doing a lot of painting and Mike Ballard's all, we should use all these paintings and put them on the Supernaut boards. And Cairo was on, Brian Gaberman was on, Paul Sharp was on, and John Miner.
Hmm.
And then shortly after that, I was like, we should get Rodriguez involved because I think he was leaving Stereo. So that's when Supernaut really started to come together. And I remember Matt Reason was on Adrenaline, and I stayed with him in Philly that summer. And I remember Ballard was just sending me blank boards and money just to stay afloat.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it was like just that was right around the time, like, Think had it just maybe ended. I was like touring and going through Philly. I think I left my dog at my house by like Divisadero. My roommates were like, when are you coming back? I'm like, I don't know, like in a month or two, like just take care of the dog, you know? And it was like that time that Supernaut really kind of took off or really just actually started.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of was cool. It was like, at first it was awesome because we had like all those guys on at the same time. And then it just kind of like after, I think 6 months is when people start, you know, Cairo got on Real.
Mm.
But we still, it was like Paul Sharp, myself. I think John Miner had left too.
It was a good team.
Yeah. So then Supernaut started with Rodriguez. And I thought that was a cool, we had a couple good videos. And
yeah,
it was cool for a little bit.
You for know? Sure. Well, we got to take a phone call. We got an avid listener here.
Wait, this is live?
What's up, Matt? Wagwan Raspels. Yes, I am. It's Cranny Ice in Cranstafari from Creation. What's up, man? Okay, I got a question for you. You probably don't even know me, but I met you in 1997, 98 in Lake Tahoe. You moved there and we were skating the South Lake Tahoe Park and we smoked herbs out in the woods. And you're extremely fucking Ross. I was hyped. But I also saw you do some of the like first tricks I ever seen anybody do. You did backside nose blunt to switch frontside pivot on a quarter pipe. And you also did kickflip backside lip slide down a fucking handrail. Well, it was a skate park rail, but still, to me, that was unbeknownst to man.
I remember that day, though. I remember I was getting good at backside nose blunts at the time.
My question is, why did you move to Tahoe? And yeah, that's how I met you. So that's a big question for me. Like, why the fuck were you there, man? But it was really bitching to see you there. Yes, I.
Why I moved there? First off, was so I lived in the Excelsior. I moved to Excelsior for like a few months, and I remember at that time no one had skated out there, and fuck, there were so many good skate spots out there. And I remember P Stone came to stay with me, and he was in my fucking room with me. And we just kept hiding out in the room because I lived with these two weird, like this weird couple that Matt Field introduced me to. Like, oh, you need somewhere to stay. You can stay with these folks.
Mm-hmm.
And they were fucking crazy, dude. I swear they were tweakers. I don't know. They were weird people.
But yeah.
Their little kid would bang on my door and I'd be like, get out of here, little kid. And the kid was fucking annoying. So anyway, we had all these good spots. So P-Stone came up to stay with me. We filmed like almost my whole 4-on-1 part. I know this is off subject, but I'm getting somewhere.
No, sick.
From that house, because there was just so many spots. You could go out your door, and it's just hills and rails, and just that. The Excelsior's dope. So me and P-Stone were out filming every day, and I was, like, waking up, and I was trying to get psyched to go skate. And this little fucking kid is bugging me, and I'm like, no, don't come in here. And I shut the door, and all of a sudden, the lady who I lived with was like, don't yell at my kid. And I was like, I'm not yelling at him. He's just, and she fucking barges to my house and goes, get the fuck out of my house. And she starts throwing my bongos out the window and throwing everything out the window. And P-Stone's all laughing, kind of like, oh shit. And I'm like, wait a minute, let me get my shit then. And I start backing up my shit, like, fuck this, I'm out of here. And Matt Rodriguez was there too in his little fucking van. And so I had to get the fuck out of Dodge. I'm like, where am I going to go? Matt's all, come stay in SAC. And at the time, like back then, like, you know, no one had cell phones. I didn't have a good network. I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do. And again, Matt Fields was like, I know Brian Blake, like this true, this guy, True Love, Brian Blake, he's an old New York skater. Uh-huh. And he's all Rasta. And I was real into Rasta at the time. I was really like learning about it and I was super into it. We used to smoke weed with, I mean, we used to be like schooled about Rasta. I know this is getting off subject.
But no, I like it.
We used to learn about Rasta from this grandpa guy that lived, that worked at this place, Reggae Run-Ins. And that's Tafari.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little young Tafari. That's his grandfather.
No way.
He used to teach us about Rasta every day. Yeah. Whoa. His old grandpa, he's still alive. Wadada is his name. And he'd just teach me and Craig and all these guys about Rasta. So we really kind of were into it. And so anyway, I got moved out of there, of like my house, and I'm trying to figure out where to go. So I stay at Matt Rodriguez's for a week or so. And like I said, Fields was like, yeah, I know this guy, Brian. And so I went and moved up with him for the winter. And I'm like still so into skating at the time. And I'd just been skating all the hills and the Excelsior. And I was like, I'm going to live up in the fucking mountains in the snow this sucks. Right. Uh-huh. But I end up living up there and it was cool living with him. And he was super Rasta, and so was I into it at the time, like deep. And so I just go snowboarding with them every fucking like day. Oh, and then we built a mini ramp in the living room
We could
skate. And so all of a sudden I learned all these tricks, like he was saying back nose. I learned like back nose blunt, all these nose blunt variations because I'm like fucking sitting there in this house, stir crazy, 10 feet of snow or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
So we just skated mini ramp all day. And that's where I started learning. Like I still can't do a lot of tricks I did back then, but I learned so many. You just do mini ramp tricks all day and just try them for hours because you have like a 3-foot mini ramp in your living room, basically.
That was in Tahoe?
Yeah, in Tahoe.
North?
And I think it was
or Squaw, or?
Whatever's the less touristy one. Hmm. South Lake or North Lake? I think it's North
South Lake. South Lake has Heavenly. I think it's North
Lake. I think we were in North Lake. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, but the snowboarding kind of got me like psyched on, like I was snowboarding so much. I got into like ollie grabs again and big like ollie grab back, like backside 180 Japans or all those kind of tricks that like require you to fly through the air and grab. Uh-huh. I remember, just from snowboarding a lot, it kind of got me more into the idea of like flying off something and doing a grab. And I think I used to try, I think at that time I learned on mini ramp, like backside Japan to backside revert.
Yeah.
And I remember on mini ramp thinking, I want to do a backside ollie Japan and I kept trying to do McTwists. And I was coming close because I was like, oh, this is just like snowboarding. So yeah, that kind of helped my skating in a way. It kind of changed my viewpoint of like back threes or all that kind of, but it was a fun moment. You know, I lived out there for a bit. And then when it got to be spring, we skated all those old skate parks around. I think I skated with Casey Lindstrom.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember just being like, this is fun, but I got to live in civilization. So I moved down here and Rodriguez was like, you can move in with me for a little bit till you find a place. And we found a place here for like $600 or something, me and this kid. And we just $300 each, had a whole house.
What year was that?
98.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe 99, like the end of 98 into 99. Cause I remember living here for almost a year and it becoming the year 2000.
Uh-huh.
I remember that, like being out on my back porch and being like, is the world going to end?
The Y2K scare.
Yeah.
Like, dude, the computers can't handle the flipping it from 99 to 2000.
Yeah, they can.
People were losing their shit. Talk a little bit about Rasta. Like that was a real big kind of
jump, huh?
It was like change. A step in your life. Yeah, for sure. Like you grew up listening to metal and rock and roll pretty much, right?
Yeah. And then like I mean, AC/DC, I liked hip hop
and shit.
Yeah, well, I was like into Sex Pistols or old hip hop. I was into that, but then I got into like Led Zeppelin and I mean, I like Sabbath just because we'd be on the tours with Greg and he'd just be jamming that shit. But I really like Bob Dylan and stuff too, though. I was kind of a hippie, so I was into a lot of hippie music, which kind of led me into like, and I like Bob Marley. And then when I started listening to Bob Marley, I started listening to the words and be like, what's this all about? And then I remember we were, you know, back east, a lot of us are Irish Catholic or whatever. That's my family roots. So I was raised into Catholic, but I remember being like, I don't believe in this like church type shit. Like what is, but I, you know, and I remember just finding like some type of spirituality in myself where I didn't know how to explain it. So I started listening to Bob and I started getting into Rasta and being like, you know, this makes sense to me. This is like, I can still be into, you know, I was at the time, I was real into reading the Bible and learning and educating myself about Buddhism, the Bible, or all this other spiritual stuff. And I just found that, like, for me, Rasta wasn't like some Christian thing where you got to be this white bread Christian and go to church. You could live your life. You could smoke your herbs. You could grow your hair like the way you want to. Like, and they have this whole little set of rules too. But a lot of it had to do with Leviticus. Like, you grow your dreadlocks long, like you grow your hair long. You don't cut your beard or do any of that. Mm-hmm. You eat vegetarian and you just like be at one with the earth, smoke herbs when you pray and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, this is like, I love this. And at the same time, I was like, fully invested in like reggae music. I loved reggae and I loved the history of reggae and I loved all the knowing all the people in reggae. So I learned a lot, both, right? And then for a while I got really kind of regimented, like, oh, I gotta have my hair like this. I have to do this and I have to print. And in a sense, it kind of took away from like what I was initially running, stopped being into anything Catholicism. I was like, you know, and a lot of people would just be like, I'm not into any of that. And that's cool. That's your path. Like, and so I've kind of found that, you know, it got me to a certain place at that time. And then, so I feel like I'm still Rasta. I still have all that in me, but I'm just thankful for life. Every day I give thanks and do my life, but I'm not like, trying to push some, oh, this is exactly how the Bible says you have to live or something. I'm not like that. I'm just more like, well, I'll treat someone good if I see them, you know, mm-hmm. I'll try to do the best I can. If I did someone wrong, I'll try to make it right, you know? And then I just like, as I got older, I just got more in tune with myself spiritually. Mm. Instead of having to have something else bring me there, I just felt at one with myself naturally. Mm-hmm. But I think at the time I learned a lot about that. I was so into it that it really got me to a place. And I still like love Rasta. And like if I'm with people who are Rasta, we can talk about Rastafari or Haile Selassie or all that kind of stuff. I'm just not into the whole like, you have to live like this, or you're going to hell, or
sure.
You have to live like this, or you're a heathen. I just think that in any religion is bullshit.
Right.
I think it's just, if you're sitting there coming outside of yourself to tell someone else how to live, you're not at one with yourself. That's a problem within yourself. So I feel like within myself, if I'm good with my life for that day and you give thanks for that day, that's all I really am about now. But I still really love Rasta and I really love reggae. Uh-huh. It still is like so deep in me.
Yeah.
That like, you know, it's even passed on, like I said, to my kid we were talking about earlier. He knows reggae like from the beginning. And like reggae to me comes from like rock steady to all this other like went from ska to rock steady to roots reggae to modern reggae to dance hall. And for me, it's like a deep culture. Like I know all the different eras and times and just really love the music. And so it got me into like reggae music, making reggae. That's why I put out albums and Ross Matthew became my little reggae name. And I made a song that got super popular about weed, you know?
Yeah.
So all those things started from Rasta and just, I still, like I said, I still love all that. That's just part of my growth in my history.
Sure. I was always curious, getting into Rasta, was it through like, in other words, what came first, Dare or Rasta? Field or Rasta? Like, did the Rasta get you more in tune with those type of dudes, or did skating with those dudes get you kind of more into Rasta?
The second part. Like, basically, I always had, like, these two albums of Peter Tosh and Bob, and I was really getting into, I remember I loved Bob Marley, mm-hmm. and then I also loved, I got Peter Tosh Legalize It, and
that's
I was
the real into weed, right?
Bob, yeah, I was real Pete. Into weed, yeah, and I was like, oh, look at this, Legalize It, he's in a weed field, I love this music, still when I listen to that Peter Tosh album, I'm like, oh my God, I love this album, like Reggae Mylitis, like, uh-huh. you know, you got the reggae bug, and then at the same time, Field loved like Dub and Yabby U, and he was getting me into all this other reggae. And then Mike Dare knew all this reggae too. And so we were like watching old reggae videos like Rockers or Land of the Look Behind and all these Jamaican reggae videos that, like, you know, most people haven't seen, but we were just kind of getting into the culture and learning about it. And like the whole thing about iPath, because the Rastas say I and I. So I and I means like the I who is yourself, who is the I of your soul, like you're a soul, you're an I, you know, and then I and I means like you're one with creation, the I of life, you know, because everyone sees one perception, but differently. So it's yeah. I and I means like myself and the almighty, or myself and the, whatever people want to call it, the almighty force of life, you know, because uh-huh. everyone has a different name for God. But like, you know, I was like, iPath, you know. So that's kind of how Field come up with it. But I think at the beginning, I really...
So it's kind of like My Path.
Yeah, My Path. iPath, like the eye, you know, the soul.
Uh-huh.
And I think really like at the beginning, though, like being hanging with Dare and Field and Dare's brother, we were kind of like... They had known some about Rasta, introduced some of that idea to me. And then I kind of went on my own super trip into it where they were like... doing their thing, and Fields still has his like own little spiritual thing he does too. And Mike Dare, you know, he's got his, he's real like herb type guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, we all kind of had our own little different take on it and took off in our own directions with that type of thing. But I think it was mainly from hanging out with them. It was influenced me from there. Like a couple, maybe a year or two later, that's when Craig came around from Satori, and we were hanging, like I said, with, Tafari's grandpa. I mean, we didn't really hang with him. We just show up at his shop and they'd be like, okay, these kids are coming in. Yeah, it was called Reggae Runnins, right at the bottom of Divisadero and Fell or something. But he would just kind of teach us about Rasta and about what they, you know. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then later years, you know, Satori went to Jamaica with, and I think really Joey Trache too, really facilitated a lot of getting all those boards out there. And we gave out hella boards. We built a ramp in Jamaica. We met all the folks.
I remember that.
And I wasn't quite there with music yet, but I was starting to like reggae and I could play it a little on guitar, but I didn't know how to sing or do any of that. And I remember seeing everybody there would always be singing and they'd always be jamming and freestyling. And it really got me like in tune with, I want to make reggae music like that. Yeah, we made all those boards. Everybody went. Like there's so many people on that trip. Cardiel, Matt Rodriguez slept out on the beach and sunburned his leg so bad he couldn't skate the rest of the trip. Like fucking, like we went everywhere and it was a sick trip. And Nigel was there.
No way.
Little Nigel Houston was there with his dad and Abby, and they stayed in Jamaica with us. And Chris Ortiz was there.
Because Nigel's from up here, right? Somewhere out of the sack, like Roseville or something.
Yeah, Woodland. So Nigel went there with his dad, and me and Cardiel skated this fucking ledge at Dunn's River Falls, and we were just charging because we were about to get kicked out. And his dad was sitting there watching us, and he was like, hey, Nigel, check this out. But before, I remember getting mad at Nigel and Abby for jumping the fence and be like, you're going to get us kicked out. Get down. You know, he's like, chill, man. Like, those are my kids. So anyway, we barged into Dunn's River Falls and there's this hubba and me and Cardiel were like, we both want to fucking shred this thing. I wanted to nose grind it, but I think, okay, so like I 50'd it. Cardiel charged and 5-0'd it, and it was on the cover of like 411 video, whatever it was. It was on the cover. Cardiel 5-0'd it, and then I was trying to nose grind it, and they came out and they're like, no man, you can't skate here or whatever. And I was like, come on, one more. And he's like, no man. He's standing there all hubbed, strong ass Jamaican looking guy. I was like, I'm not fucking with that dude.
Yeah.
And then some weird Rasta guy was like, oh, he's just some old Jamaican. He was like, come on, man, I'll show you the, in his Jamaican. He's like, me show you the real place. And we all went. Fuck, I mean, there was at least like, it's Carl Watson, like 12 to 15 of us went up into the woods and he took us to this waterfall and we all went swimming up there.
Sick. Yeah. That's amazing. I've never been there. I went to Cayman Island, but never Jamaica. And then how did that happen with, you mentioned earlier, you've been playing music, but that one song really took off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Ganja in My Brain is my big reggae song. I made that in that room, actually. I just started making music and put out this little album and it got a good review on a reggae thing. And I just put it out myself. I just kind of mixed it all myself and made it all myself. And it kind of got its little buzz and it was cool. And then MySpace was around and I put out a few songs and they were all right. And I made this one song one night. I think I was listening to Sizzla and I was like singing, I came home and I was like singing the song over and over in my head, like ganja in my meditation, ganja in my brain. And then I was like, I wrote it out and then I had the beat and the beat was like, I think I was singing some weird song on it before and I listened to it. I was like, this song sucks. And so I got home and I was kind of blazed and I just sang it out real quick. Boom, I put it together and I mixed it. And I was like, ooh, I was like, I don't need to fuck with this at all. This is perfect, right? So I put it on MySpace and within like, a couple days. I remember saying to myself, I think this is going to be a hit. And it sounds stupid, but I was like, this song's pretty catchy. Cause I played it at the dance hall. Cause we used to do reggae nights and we'd be DJing. And so people would walk in and we'd have a big old crowd of people and we played that song and everyone got down to it. So I was like, wow, people are feeling the song. So then I put it on MySpace within like a week, it was getting 1,000 plays a day. And so I was like, shit, man. And then, this French magazine. The guy's like, I'm a skater and I work for a French reggae magazine and it's called Raga. And he's like, I want to put you on a mix CD. So he put me on a mix CD with that song with like all these famous reggae dudes.
Huh.
And so that came out and then all of a sudden in France, because I had already put that song on this thing called TuneCore, I distribute my own music.
Uh-huh.
And so instantly, within like a few months, all of a sudden my music checks were like $100 a month. And I'm like, I'm getting $100 a month from my music. And it's just all ganja in my brain. And then all of a sudden it got on YouTube and it's just over time, it just became like millions and millions of plays.
Whoa.
And I think the most I made in a month was $800 one time.
Damn.
When it really first hit after that CD was out. And then it was mainly France. You'd look at all because it went out in France and you'd look at all the reggae. All you can see where your sales are coming from is mainly France. So I still, I think I make like $400 a month off that song.
Damn. That's pretty sick.
It's cool. Yeah. And it's just all over YouTube. It's just everywhere.
Do you think being a pro skater helped open some of those doors?
Yeah, for sure. Because that guy was a skater. He knew me from skating. Uh-huh. Yeah, and he's like, Matt Pels, you're Ross Matthew. Sick. I don't remember who the guy was. Fuck, I wish I could find him or email him and see what he's doing now. But he just was like working for Raga Reggae Magazine, you know, and that's how he got me in. He got me a review in there on my album as well.
And did you start with Matt Rodriguez?
Yeah. So like I had a guitar and when I came out here, Matt was in a little band. He was starting with this dude, Kenny, and Kenny was in this band called Steady Ups and they were in Steady Ups together. And I remember I'd go to their shows and Steady Ups is a rock steady reggae band.
Uh-huh.
I'd go and I'd watch them and I'd be like, this band is so put together. Like they were like the next, like Filibuster was a band that was from here in Sac.
Yeah.
And basically the lead singer, Kenny, went to Steady Ups and it became like real rock steady, like reggae, like put together super clean, good reggae that is classic, right? And I remember watching them and just being like, I want to be in a band like this. Like I think I joined the band with Matt and I would just play bongos or I'd try to learn guitar. And so I just kind of learned, but it took a few years, man. It took a good number of years before I was actually, you know, I would sing and play guitar, but it took a while to like really hone in and get in tune and sing properly. And so through Matt, I was in a band with him for years and I still really singing wise wasn't there, but I was building. And then I became like friends with people who did DJing and reggae nights. And so I'd be on the mic all the time and I was learning what they call rhythms. So they just play a rhythm and it's blank and it's a classic rhythm, like the answer rhythm that goes like ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-da-da-dum, dum-dum, ba-dum, da-dum, da-da-dum. It's like a reggae rhythm that's classic that a million people sing on. It'd be like your turn and then you take the mic and sing over it and get people. And I learned.
Is it like freestyle?
It's like freestyling, but if you already have a, like I would sing Ganja in My Brain.
Oh, but you have.
But I'd sing it over this rhythm or something, or I'd sing another song I got over this rhythm. So I really learned a lot about singing over rhythms and how to mix in a rhythm and how to sing over a rhythm and how to really deliver and get people pumped. Like it's really a big thing to get connected with the crowd and make sure they're feeling you. And it's tough to catch people, right? And so you have to learn what catches people and what really gets them listening to you and not just walking away from the stage, you know?
It's kind of like comedy, right? Where you kind of take notes as you're doing it to learn for the next time. Like, this worked, so I'm going to stick with this. This didn't work.
Yeah, this was bombing. Like, I was really thinking I was feeling it, but actually you're closing your eyes and you're trying to zone in on your music and no one's listening to you because you're not connecting. You know?
Uh-huh.
You have to, like, reel in the people.
Sure.
Especially performing live, you know. So Matt, but definitely Matt was the first one that got me into music.
I get stoked when he plays with Tommy and Chuck Treese. Like, they'll come and play a show in SF. Sometimes Ray Barbie, too. I mean, it's just like
so cool.
Kind of just jam style of all their eclectic.
Yeah.
It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
So when you were teaching your son about this, like, my question is kind of like, obviously, Bob and Peter Tosh.
Yeah.
But outside that, like, what are some, like, staples that you would, like, say, these guys will help you to explore?
Me and him are super close, so we hang out all the time. We go on road trips and all that, and we just hang out all the time. So I showed him reggae and he was kind of into other stuff, like he got real into the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and all these other classic bands, and he was learning guitar and learning all those type of songs. And then I kind of showed him some reggae muting and palm muting a little bit, and then mainly skanks, and then he learned that. And then right away, he started learning Bob songs, and he started learning Peter Tosh. And like I said, my kid is just a musical, like what we have with skating, he has that with music. He's just in tune with it. So, but then right away, he started learning Gregory Isaacs songs, Big Youth songs. Dennis Brown, he knows hella Dennis Brown songs, and like the Melodians to like Slim Smith, like old Derek Harriott, like all the old soul reggae, like really 60s, 70s reggae. Manny, you could tell Manny any song, he'll be like, oh, that's this song. He'll pick out the bass line for you and he'll show you the chords, or he'll listen to it for a second and be like, that's C and G, it goes like this. He just instantly is intuitive. So yeah, he's just really
that's
like
awesome.
And he loves soul and old school too, which now he's teaching me about reggae. Like he's like, you don't know about this song by the Mighty Diamonds? And I'm like, show it to me. I'm like, I've never heard that song. And he's like, yeah, it goes like this. You play it for me or something, you know.
And how old is he?
He's 16.
16.
So he was learning all, I mean, at 15, he was already like, he had a musical catalog in his brain that was just amazing. But he's always been a kid that when he gets into something, he studies it and he becomes like completely knowing everything about it. That's just his personality, you know.
If you were like, Smitty, you got to go home and listen to these three.
Well, like, I like.
Is it Black Uhuru, Israel Vibration?
I used to love that kind of stuff. And he loves SZA too. I got him into SZA. I used to love that kind of stuff and I still do. But now I'm real into the old school, like Slim Smith, which would be like My Conversation. Love your brothers, Romaine Virgo. The Ethiopians. It's just old, like, kind of rock steady is what I really love now.
Okay. I'm going to check some of it because I know Bob and Peter Tosh.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I worked at Ghost Gate for, like, a bunch of years, and the dude I worked with was full Rasta dude.
Oh, yeah.
So he would, like, he would get me into Israel Vibration. We went to like shows at the Fillmore and, and up there. And I went to Maritime Reggae on the River one time even.
No way.
I saw Israel Vibration. They all had like,
still so sick,
the, like the walkers and
Why
stuff.
Worry and what do they got all these good songs.
Yeah.
There's all these Bob songs that are classics. And I found out through my son that there were Curtis Mayfield songs.
Oh.
And Bob just kind of redid them,
uh-huh.
and they became famous Bob songs that everybody thinks is a Bob song.
Yeah.
But if you, but then Manny's like, no, look at this original Curtis Mayfield song, or look at this, is this comes from the Impressions.
Yeah,
I think it was the Impressions that Curtis Mayfield was in before, and I, and then he got me all into Curtis Mayfield. So Manny still to this day will be like, oh, I know this version of this reggae song, and then he'll be like, oh, but here's the Marvin Gaye version, and he'll play me that too.
How
He's like,
that's cool.
It's fun to be around. Like
to be on
when
top
he gets
of.
Jamming, it's like I just like to kick back and listen to him and be like, "What's that? What's this song?"
That's real cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Sacto life.
Yeah.
So we're caught up to the present, and you've been here for like what did you say about 15 years?
I've been here for 20, I think.
Oh, 20?
18 or 19.
Okay.
But I've been in this house for 16.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I've been here quite a while now. Like I think I'd say 20 years. So 1999.
What's up with Jim Boy's Tacos?
Fuck, it's the best, man.
Is
I love
really?
That place. Yes. Rodriguez introduced it to me when I first came. And I remember because I was vegetarian and I just get the veggie burritos. Now I eat meat, but I don't know why, man. It's just the best for me. I still love Jim Boy's. I'll always go there. I like people will be like,
people
let's go to La Fiesta
about it.
Or, because it's like Taco Bell, but upgraded way better. Like everything's fresher. Everything's just, it's just the bomb, man. It's like fast food, but just great. If they're listening, they should sponsor me.
Okay.
But their Instagram fucks me up because they make these awesome, like I follow them on Instagram and they make these awesome like taquito burritos mixed with this and this. And they're like only at participating Jim Boy's. And then you go there and they're like, no, we don't make those. And I'm like, come on, man. You show me all this Jim Boy's. Like, yeah.
Shout out to Jim Boy's.
Shout out.
You are giving out skateboard sponsors. Matt Pales right here in your hometown.
Hook it up, man.
916.
Yeah, I need a Jim Boy's shirt.
And you've been skating a lot, huh?
Yeah, like the last, I think, 5 years. Like, I worked at the B Street. I ran the skate park here at B Street for years. And then I got moved into youth development. So now I'm teaching a class about getting jobs to kids, which isn't my forte, but it's cool, whatever. But at that time when I was at the B Street, literally, like, all I would do is skate there. And then at the end of the day, you go home from work and you feel like I'm done for the day. So I just skated skate park for, like, fuck, like 6 years. And before that, I had a knee injury. So I was out for like 2.5 years and kind of gained weight and got like out of shape. And I was like, this sucks. Like, I got to get back into skating. So I'd skate a lot at the B Street, right? That's cool. And I rehabbed my knee and got it back to normal. And like the last 4 years, though, after I got like let go of the skate park job and moved into this job, I started just street skating all the time. And my one guy I knew, Josh, the guy Josh Mosh,
shout out,
he'd always be going on these missions. So I'm like, and I don't like trying to hit people up and having people flake. So he'd always be down, like, let's go skate. And he has spots for days. And I'd drive Uber too, so I'd find spots. So then the mission would be every weekend or every time I got some time off, let's go hit this ditch, or let's go hit this weird bank, or I know about this other spot that's in this. So we just are on the mission for new spots, you know,
okay.
Skate all these weird different spots. So now that's still my thing, is every day I get a chance, I'll go, you know, if I have a day off and I have some time, I'm going to skate at least 2 or 3 spots. I'll get a list going of like where we're going to go.
Right.
And some days it's going to be mellow. Some days I'll try to do something gnarly, but I just love to, when I get free time, I want to go skate because I just love it, man. I don't want to lose that. You know what I mean? And for a little bit, I felt like I was like, not losing it, but I was like, you know, not doing it as much. I remember after my knee injury, I remember thinking like, man, I haven't like actually sweated or skated in like so long because I was hurt and it was like bumming me out. Like, you know, but we got mad ditches here.
I know.
There's so many ditches and you just got to know where to go to them and how to fix them up or make them good, you know?
Yeah. McKenny's been, or he's come up at least once or twice. He's so hyped on. He's like, dude, I got to get back to SAC.
There's so much fun shit to skate here. And then he's like perfect for that kind of stuff because, like, I think I want to take him to this ditch where I shoveled out all the dirt and I swept it out and I put a curb up at the top and he hasn't skated it yet, but it's fucking super McKenny. Is he goofy?
Yeah,
he's goofy, so he could fuck with it.
Huh.
But it was so cool skating with him that one day because the other day I skated with him was at B Street.
Right.
We still had that sick, like, McKenny energy.
Yeah.
And then when we skated with Eric J the other day, I was just so hyped because I was like, it was like Friday. My girl was working, so I had some time to skate. I'm like, let's go. We're meeting up. And he was just killing it like he does, like, you know?
Yeah.
That she did like a kickflip barrel on the sketchy ass bank. And then you got to bomb the hill and he was eating shit. But he was like, no way, man. I got to do it for you, man. And
shout out.
And then he did the classic pull it out of your ass type of McKenny shit. And I was like, he's still like that dude, you know?
And now for a new segment called First Impressions with Tim McKenny.
My first impression of Matt Pales was him, Dan, O'Brien, their chicas, Magna Head, and Salba up at their old city house. We'd go up there with the Foster City Posse and go get boards and hang out in Dan's room and watch Dan smoke cigarettes and hang out in bed with Ashley. Years later, I'm pro with these same guys going, wow, dude, I was just a high schooler a couple of years ago. Now I'm skating pro with these guys. Now I'm in my 40s, and he's my animal chin finder. I've been going to SACTO. I call him to check in. He's got me on his Instaglam.
Glam.
You stop it. And I seen him, you know, at the B. It's all started at the B. I'm handing Matt Rodriguez $5. First time I've ever man-fanned in my life. Anyways, stop it. Now all the time I'm trying to get a hold of him to go skating, and he's just got a little young girl that he's in love with. I can't even get him to come out. And I think he's on steroids. I think he's all roided out nowadays is what I'm hearing. He's just roided out of his mind.
When I first met him, I remember being kind of like, I was on Think, and I was a little bit like, dude, this guy's fucking taking over, because he'd just go to a spot and destroy it, you know, and you'd be like, damn, dude, how do I keep up with this fool? Like, you know that downhill in SF and it goes down like this and it's like the bank to wall and you have to ollie up the...
Yep.
He just went there and was killing it. Remember that video part where... Yeah. And me, Dan, and Phil were all skating it, but he was specifically destroying that spot. And I remember just being like, this kid is amazing. Like, how does he just charge so hard? Like,
he was a wall ride machine.
God, he would just charge, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he still, like, just psychs me out to this day. Like, fucking goes for it. Him and Jesse Pius together.
Oh, yeah. Jesse was so sick. So talented.
Yeah.
Man, he's, like, one of those dudes. Like, Wade was like the epitome of the dude that could just like not skate for 6 months and then like come out and just rip like he never stopped.
Yeah.
They could be off of it for a while and then just still kill it. Like they were natural.
Yeah, Wade was, he really was another guy. Fuck, man, he just taught me how to just fucking go for it and just like, you know, stay on your board kind of like wide leg. Just, God, he would do so many rad switch airs here at fucking Sacto, that vert ramp.
Yeah.
Skating with him on vert and Phil, like I sucked at vert, but they would just be like, dude, just fucking do this. And you know how Wade talks.
What was the name of that place?
I was like trying- Grind?
It was the Grind.
Yeah.
The one that had the bowl with the pole.
Yeah, like the Wade bowl with the pole. Air
and hit the pole. And
yeah, transfer. And fucking Phil did that ollie from the quarter pipe to Smith grind across the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, that was
gnarly.
Dude, so do you see any of the old dudes like Joe Sierra or fucking Greg Carroll lives up here too or no?
Yeah, Greg lives here. And I said, he said, next time Phil and Eric J are here, you better, I mean, Tim and Eric J are here, you better call me. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Uh-huh. So Greg, I saw him one day. We hung out and walked around, and we talked still like here and there. But, yeah, he lives here. But Joe Sierra, his two kids skate, and they're hella cool. And so I'll skate with them, or I see Joe at the B a lot.
Uh-huh.
Fuck. I see Mike Rafter around sometimes.
Okay.
What
about Mako? We got any Mako sightings?
Mako's around, dude. I see him a lot, dude. He's here and there. He lives at this house with his Dark Star flag. He's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's out and about. Fuck, who else is there? Like old school Sacto. I mean, Ricky Windsor. He used to fix my car all the time. And
no way.
Now he ignores my calls because I fucking just hit him up to help me with car shit. He's like, Bales is calling me. He's going to ask me about car shit. But he's got a sick little quarter pipe at his house.
You know, and Curtis Franklin?
Yeah, Curtis Franklin.
We're trying to work on getting Ricky enough. I'll bring him a 12-pack, whatever he needs. I want to come over and talk with him a little bit. No,
he's elusive one.
Yeah.
Rodriguez, he's got a little Sunday parking lot shit that he does where they pull out a bunch of stuff. And fucking Sean Martin goes there with his kid.
Shut up.
Yeah, so Sean Martin goes to that little spot. We were skating with him last week.
We need Sean on the show. Just
seeing him do backside ollies.
Dude, Shawnee so Mac. Rad.
Shout out.
Yeah, he's got more grays than you, dude.
Yeah, fuck.
I do too, though. I just dyed my hair.
Damn.
But he was there and his kid was there. His kid rips too and skates around and... Uh-huh. That's a good little thing, though. They got quarter pipes they pull out. Him and Casey pull it out. His little Esla Boom company, I did some graphics for it. So I'm psyched to see that.
How cool. We got a... I already forgot this. This was, like, high on my list. One year, we had King of the Road meetup, B Street Skate Park, Midway Point. All four teams show up, and they do the Midway challenges, right? We get there.
Yeah, fuck this
all
day.
Four vans show up. Matt's working there at the time.
Fuck my life.
Somebody comes in and all of a sudden it's just firework mayhem. We go inside eventually after everyone's fucked. We go inside and we do the challenges. There's some sick ones. They have the one in the bowl where the guys are hitting each other with the, it's like American Gladiator. You whack them. So whatever, we're in there doing the thing. And all of a sudden we notice there's a fire outside.
Yeah, so they basically almost burned down the whole fucking side of the hill next to B Street. Yeah, you guys showed up with the fireworks. And so I'm working there, and I call my supervisor like the day before, because I work for the city and I run a skate park. So I'm like, hey, Daniel, we got the Thrasher guys coming tomorrow. They're going to film something. He's like, cool. I can open up early? Yeah, no problem. I open up. I'm doing all the thing. It's all good. But being a skate park, like running it for the city, you got to make sure no one drinks there and all that. So fuck, dude, they just show up. Everyone shows up, hella people. I'm like, and there's fireworks and they're fucking lighting up fireworks. So like, I got to be a city worker at the time. And I'm sitting there like, these are my skater homies. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, fuck. And so it's just fucking going off. And I got to be like, they just lit up some fireworks. Sorry, man. I don't know. I didn't know they were going to do that. And then, within like 10 minutes, dude, like someone was wheeling a keg into the fucking park. And I'm like, dude, you can't bring a keg. Dan Z. And he didn't even remember me. I knew Dan Z. I was like, bro, you can't bring a keg in here. And then he's like, I'm going in there with the keg. I'm like, no, you're not. Fucking, I'm like, not letting him. And
he's
finally,
from Mass.
Yeah. And the motherfucker was like, acting like he didn't know me. Didn't say what's up, Matt, or nothing. So it was just one of those things, like King of the Road is on their journey. And like, you're just in their way at that point. So I was like, oh, fuck me, like, I'm in the worst position right now. So anyway, they almost burned down the whole side of the thing. The fire department comes. No one's admitting to nothing. It's just...
It's right next to a septic tank.
No. It's right next to a fucking gas line.
Your gas.
So the whole fucking field is a gas line. So I'm like, God, I think I threw a table on top of it trying to put it out. I was fucked. So like, I'm about to lose my job, basically. Like, they're like, the next day, it's on the fucking news. And so the next day I go down to, I think Monday, I have to go down to city hall with all my city supervisor people. And they're like, what happened? I'm like, I don't know, man. We just opened up the skate park. These are a bunch of people that just came from on the road and they just started doing shit. I couldn't control it. Like, I made all the right calls at the right time. And so all the city, like, bigwigs were like, well, I guess the skate park guy, Matt, pretty much did his job and called the right people at the right time. So I was able to keep my job. But I was fucking stressed, like, yeah, I think I'm just gonna get fired now. Sick, like, you know, the fucking coolest gig, you get to run a skate park and skate for a living. I'm about to lose it.
Yeah,
but I was kind of bummed, but I was like, you can't really blame anyone, it's just what they're doing, like, they're not gonna, you know. I'm just glad the whole fucking thing got put out quick.
But then when the cops came, they put everybody outside and they're like, all right, if somebody doesn't fucking admit to this, I'm bringing you all into jail. And then I remember Clive Dixon, like, just took it. I don't even think it was necessarily his fault,
right,
but he's just like, I did it.
Yeah, luckily it all panned out okay. Like, it basically just was over with. I mean, I don't know if Clive Dixon ever had to face the wrath or what.
I'm not sure what happened. I'll have to hit him up. It might have just blown over, but I remember that day being like, fuck, we're fucked. Because the cops were there, the fire trucks were there. It was like, yeah, like you said, there was some locals there just pointing fingers at all of us, getting all...
And then we had to put everybody back in the skate park. And P-Stone was there too.
Yeah.
But it sucked because I couldn't really connect or say what's up, because King of the Road, everyone's on such a hype that you're like, can barely connect, because they're, you guys are like, okay, we're doing this, we're fighting this, we're going to win, and then we're going to move on to the next spot. And so I'm like, P-Stone, I'm wanting to catch up with him, but he was...
Yeah, this on a whole nother level. Yeah. The adrenaline is insane, and you're on like these, like, you're so rushed. Like, I got to leave 3 minutes ago.
Yeah,
we gotta get to the next spot, and I gotta do 5 tricks.
I think one year that one of the challenges was like, go to the rope swing with Matt Fales.
No way.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Because I think I'd been rope swinging on Instagram a bunch, and Jake was probably like, "Fucking go do a rope swing with this guy."
Uh huh.
And then the other one was like, get someone to do like a naked McTwist in the B, and I think one of my workers like let him in to do it, and I was like, no, you can't do that, you don't know, no naked people at the B street. But Jaws did the McTwist and got it in.
Oh man.
That's the one thing I don't miss about working at a skate park, is you gotta be like, it sounds cool because you get to skate all the time and run a skate park,
but
cool,
you have to be the city, disciplinarian,
but then you gotta be the guy that's like, yeah, kids, you gotta put on your pads or it fucking sucks, you know, you're like, oh, you can't drink here, so it kind of feels like you gotta be a cop, and that sucks, you know? So I like what I do now. I just help kids get jobs and sit in a classroom for a few hours a day and teach them shit like that, and it's basically helping youth in the Sacramento area.
Hell yeah, like, that sounds real cool.
It's basically helping them get jobs, like, and it's not like troubled kids, it's all types of kids, so they call me Mr. Matt and shit.
Mr. Matt. Well, Mr. Matt, is there anything else we should touch on?
No, I mean, this has been good. I don't want to keep you all day.
No, well, good, but fuck yeah, it's been rad catching up. Good seeing you again.
Yeah, you too, man.
And what we'll just end it with a little ganja in my brain or something?
Yeah, put that in. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. Hell yeah. Thank you, dude.
All right. Thanks, Schmitty.
Yeah.
Ganja in my meditation, ganja in my brain. Ganja, we take away my stress and strain. Ganja in my meditation, ganja in my brain. Marijuana, take away my stress and pain. Ganja in my meditation, ganja in my brain. Marijuana, take away the stress and pain. Ganja is the medication, ganja is the cure. Police are them, I fight the marijuana for sure. Purify me heavens and they make me feel pure. And it with the Cali, we be bring it on tour. Ganja in the meditation, ganja in my clothes. No offense, I'm smoking marijuana around you. Ganja in me daily, ganja me currency. Ganja is the currency and
natural. Ganja in me meditation, ganja in my brain. Marijuana take away my stress and pain. Well, ganja is the medication, ganja is the cure. Police have them a fighting marijuana for sure. Well, ganja is for stone, but not Solomon's grave. And you think the river Gandhi's got his name? Ganja in the hemp that are not quite the same. Same family, same plant, different name. Jamaica lambs bred curly ganja. America purple scraps and Ingeka. Stop smoking my herb, Bill. I'm not gonna stop. No, I'm not gonna stop smoking my herbs. It's a get me in touch with the earth. Make me give thanks for what life is worth. Doing the trees, sweet trees blowing in the breeze. When I look out up on my yard and feel, that's how I feel. It's so real, so good I feel. Gaze up on my window seal, peeping what I saw. I threw the aroma of the wheat blow. 200 collie trees. They're blowing in the breeze. Ganja in my meditation, ganja in my brain. Mary wanna take away my stress and pain. Ganja in my meditation, ganja in my brain. Ganja it take away my stress and all my pain. Ganja is the medication, ganja is the cure. Police are them a fighting marijuana for sure. Purify my heavens and I make my thoughts pure. 100 weight of candy with me, take it one tour. Ganja in my daily, ganja in my clothes. No offense, I'm smoking marijuana around you. Ganja is the currency. Start to get to my head. Ganja is my meditation, ganja in my brain. Marijuana take away my stress and pain. Ganja is the medication, ganja is the cure. Please fight the marijuana for sure. Jamaica lambs bred curly ganja. America purple skunk and indica. I'm not gonna stop smoking my herbs. It'll get me in touch with the earth. Make me give thanks for what life is worth. 200 ganja trees there.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talkin' Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow up them charts. All the episodes will always remain free to my listeners, but if you'd like to help support the show, you can do so at our website, talkinschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like stickers, beanies, hats, possibly even a t-shirt. The website has an entire archive of the episodes with extra photos and sometimes even video. If you have personal pics of our Talkin' Schmidt guests, please send them to me at epicallytrife@yahoo.com, and maybe your photo will end up on the site, or better yet, on Talkin' Schmidt's Instagram account. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by me, Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature, and a special shout out goes to my executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
Until next week, this is Talkin' Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Talkin' Schmidt, Talkin' Schmidt, Talkin' Schmidt.